This is Bad Movies We Love, part of the Scheist Podcast Network.
If you're listening to this, you are the Resistance.
Hello, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a very special spotlight session here on Bad Movies We Love, where we don't just talk about the movies, we talk to the people who make them. I've really enjoyed doing this interview series, and I've been very fortunate to talk to a lot of interesting people. And in this Filmmaker in Focus episode, I was joined by Topher Graham, the co-founder of Bad Cookie Pictures. He's a writer, director, producer, production designer, and a podcaster in his own right. He quickly became a regular face in the Vancouver horror scene for his highly collaborative, distinctive, and humorous style. And I was thrilled to have him on the show today to talk about his career experiences and his upcoming short film release for Halloween, Don't Tell Your Mom. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the interview. Topher, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with me. I'm glad we could make this work on short notice, kind of.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here because I spent pretty much all of last night and a lot of this morning watching your short films and watching other films, I guess, that are within under the umbrella of your production company. And I was reading a little bit about Bad Cookie Pictures, and this is a company that you and Ariel started together, right?
Yes. So we started together in 2015, about. So Ariel came to me with her first short script, which would go on to become Ready to Burst. Mm. And she came to me and she said, you know, I'm looking for this script. I really need to. I was wondering if you would help me produce it, direct it. And I said, no, Ariel, you need to direct it. If you're going to come to me with the script, I will help you get it off the ground. I will get you a crew. I'll make sure we can get some equipment, but ultimately you'll have to direct it. Just, it's your script, you need it. And so together we got together and we produced this short film. It's gone on to be pretty popular. It moved around the festivals quite quickly, and after that it was pretty easy to see that we were really good at working together, and we just started making films from there.
Oh, that's awesome. And for people that are listening, this is Ariel Hansen, director. She acts in a lot of the films as well. So did you know her before 2015, or was that your first interaction, was her coming to you with the script?
We had both been working with Luchigor Productions. I was a set decorator, and she had acted in their Evil Dead in 60 Seconds. It's a short trailer, a fake trailer. It was for a competition that we had here in Vancouver. So Gigi actually introduced us, and we became quite good friends. After that, we started writing a feature script together that was going to be a 420 inspired slasher film. Mm-hmm. And that one didn't get off the ground, but it was funny because we one night we took a pot cookie and just to get into the writing space, and it turned out to be a little much, and that's where the term bad cookie comes from.
And I mean, like, coincidentally also Bad Cookie BC, the initials for British Columbia, where your production studio is based out of. So I think kismet in that way. And you mentioned Luchigor, so I'll just jump into this question now. You said you had sort of begun doing
set design and production design, working with Gigi Saul Guerrero and Lucha Gore. And you've done production design on some of these short films as well. You've won some awards for that kind of stuff. So I want to know first, like, what did you learn working with Lucha Gore and working with Gigi?
Gigi and Lucha Gore were my first cruise once I got out of film school. And so really what I learned was a good format to build a crew in, basically a good model to work on films, work on promotions. They were really inspirational to me in how we promote Bad Cookie Pictures and how we branded and essentially kept our crews tight, well fed. I had an amazing experience with Lucha Gore. I'll still go help them out if they're shooting in town. They don't do that as much anymore, but they're they're just incredible people to work with, and I always wanted to bring that to my sets. So, you know, we use a lot of the same people, so we're still pretty tightly integrated. Don't Tell Your Mom, the film we'll be talking about in a little bit, was actually shot by Luke Bramley and Rainer Shima, who are from Lucha Gore Productions. So we're quite tightly integrated, but I would say I learned everything from this, just in terms of working on set.
Oh, that's awesome. When you think of sort of what you do with production design and what you were doing and what you do in terms of like writing and directing, what are some of like the big creative differences between approaching a film to do just the sort of production design stuff and then approaching the film to really write, direct, and sort of have more creative control?
I would say when I'm doing production design, it's like playing. I kind of try to get into the character's head. So I pick up stuff that I think represents them really well, and I focus on this specific area. And I really like to get my hands dirty. I like to jump in. I like to hang stuff from the walls and really get into the mindset of what's going on, because I'm presenting the look of the film.
Yeah.
And I think the ironic thing is when I'm directing, I kind of let go of that. I try to let go of the control so that the production designer can come in and really take on that kind of work. And the way I see it when I'm directing is I'm building a stage and inviting people to perform on it. And so I like to make sure that I have the people who I know are good to work with, who I know will understand my kind of vision and will actually like bring on the best ideas in those departments that I'm directing. So I like to give a lot of flexibility because I believe the collaborative experience is the best part of filmmaking.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to look at it. And a lot of the other filmmakers that I've spoken to as well have spoken to that same notion that it is the sort of collaboration that makes it what it is. And I was going to sort of ask you about like the difficulty in maybe letting go of some of the production design work when you take on the director's chair, so to speak. But I'm glad that it's a smooth transition for you. But you also act, you know, you're in front of the camera several times in several of these short films, also in Weird Woods in that series. So when you have to not only like be in front of the camera, but also sort of direct yourself in those situations, like how do you go into that?
Acting for me is not one of my first passions. I don't approach it like a lot of the actors that I work with, but I will take on characters that are essentially caricatures of myself. So I do like to just kind of overemphasize my own characteristics. And when it comes to like directing myself, a lot of that is asking people around me if it works, watching over clips and seeing if I can get a laugh reaction in myself. If that works, then I've done my job. But essentially, it's just a little bit of like jump into it, tumble around, and go as far as I can go. And just knowing that the character is supposed to be a big version of me.
Well, it seems like you've had a lot of fun. It seems like everybody on all of the projects is having a lot of fun from the way it looks. So I think there's definitely like, I don't know, not something in the water, but you know what I mean? Like there's a good energy that is there at Bad Cookie. And you also have a podcast as well. So you're not a stranger to this format, and you do that with Ariel. So where did that come from? Because that leans into like what I see here described as true-ish crime kind of stories. And I listened to a couple, and I listened to the most recent one, and that sort of turned the corner into like a more scripted kind of radio drama environment, which I thought was pretty cool. But I'm curious, like, where did that start? Like, how do you use the podcast in the hierarchy of sort of feeding your creative needs?
BC is Creepy was a really interesting project. We essentially, what we wanted to do was start a basically like true crime, a pretty authentic true crime podcast. And we were quite new to the format at the time. We were listening to a lot of Last Podcast on the Left and Dark Poutine and stuff that, you know, it was really exciting. And we always kind of jumped in with the idea that we're going to bring in characters and the format was going to kind of tumble apart, and we're going to add in some like really fun things so that if somebody is watching or listening to the podcast all the way to the end, they're going to get something out of it, because essentially what was happening was Ariel was getting possessed and started to do weird things, including like, I think at one point she fed a cat to the guest, and then the guest went missing. And we just kind of wanted to play with the format in a way that engaged people. And because while it was fun to research all these stories that were happening in our town, and I'll be upfront, we've ended the podcast just because we've run out of good stories that weren't murders. So we didn't have a lot more of like, because some of the fun ones were supernatural, like we had a haunted ghost, a haunted doll in Canal, BC, or we have an island out in Stanley Park that is the site of an ancient like indigenous war, and like those were fun, but we wanted to just bring something new to the format, and we knew kind of deconstructing it into a narrative as we went along would be really interesting.
And I see maybe some of that similar energy sort of carried over to Weird Woods, where you're doing short reviews of other like horror shorts, which I think is really cool, by the way, because I feel like short films kind of get sort of maybe like categorized as like lesser than in when it comes to filmmaking. But, you know, most of the time when I talk to people about short films, there's like maybe a misunderstanding in that it only exists as sort of like a proof of concept or something like that. But it is its own substantial art form within filmmaking. And most of the time at the end of the year, when I start watching a bunch of shorts to like catch up on stuff that I missed throughout the year, they end up being some of my favorite films throughout the year. So having the vehicle to, you know, showcase the work of others and to like also kind of do it in a way where you're having some fun discourse and also you're scripting something. It seems like that was maybe like the natural evolution of the podcast. Is that kind of what happened?
Kind of. Weirdwoods came about because we had been approached for this television series on college TV in Seattle called the Halloween Horror Hour. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Hey, we see you're doing short film reviews on TikTok. I was wondering if you'd want to create some segments for our TV show. You know, 1-2 minutes per episode, but you can do it however you want. We'll throw it in." And I looked at that and I said, "Yes, absolutely." I had already been doing short film reviews for the TikTok just as a kind of way to engage with our audience and bring more people on. But also because I've been working in short films for the good part of probably 14 or 15 years now, I believe that as a filmmaker, short films are just incredible to make, and some of my best work, of course. But I do feel like if there is a good medium or place where people can go and watch just horror short films, it would become like a really good I think people just need a proper platform to view them on, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. I was talking to another filmmaker who's been making short films and is developing a feature. And he was like, there's not a lot of sort of investment in that sort of from the streaming front. Like each streamer maybe has some. I know like Hulu does Huluween, and they have sometimes like, you know, 3 to 8 minute type runs of short horror films. And Netflix occasionally buys some and you'll see some there. But I mean, even that is like that's Wes Anderson, David Lynch type of stuff. Like kind of like big name brand short films. And so it would be nice to have a streaming service that it focuses exclusively on shorts that is this kind of stuff. And I mean, I feel like we'll probably get there one day because I think there's going to be enough interest in that. But kind of YouTube maybe fills the gap for people between the fans looking for short horror content or short film content of any kind, and then people that are like readily making it. And then even in film festivals, it may be short specific film festivals, you know, maybe begin to get a little bit of momentum in the coming years. I'm hopeful still.
I go to every film festival that I can. So I really do believe in shorts just as a medium. I would say even my shorts that are kind of connected, I prefer them in this format than to bring them into a feature length, just because I like the digestibility of it. I like how the story comes and goes essentially in a locked, quick format, so you can really digest it or leave it if you didn't like it.
Yeah. I think there's a certain level of economy when it comes to short horror filmmaking. Like you have to be on top of your choices in a way that if the runtime is sort of like, you know, fluctuating between an hour and a half and an hour and 50 minutes, something like that. Like there's sometimes a lot of bloat in movies where when you're making a short film, like you don't have the luxury of allowing yourself those indulgences. Like, you have to make hard choices, and you have to sort of make the story and the shoot focused on the idea that this is going to be only a few minutes. And so I'm curious for yourself, like, how do you approach like shooting day and setup and rehearsal and all that stuff, knowing that, hey, we're coming in, this is going to be 5 minutes in total. Like, where do you spend the majority of like your time as the filmmaker?
The majority of the time would be set in prepping, making sure that everybody's on board, just organizing, making sure that everybody knows what we're looking into so that the actual shoot day can move really fast. A lot of my shorts I like to shoot in one day, just because I feel like that's how you can get the rhythm, that's how you can get the timing, that's how you can keep it contained. I have done over multiple days, but I do like the quick, get really intimate with these characters, see what the journey takes them on, and like get out. And also it makes it really easy to keep people happy. If you know they're coming out for one day, it's going to be really fun. We're going to feed you, we're going to promote you afterwards, and we're going to all be able to celebrate and watch it in a screening or watch it in the festivals and hang out. Like, it's a good experience if it is contained. And just for me, I like that kind of energy. So I spend the majority of my time either getting people ready or being in post and making sure I'm getting the most out of it.
Well, like I said, it looks like everybody is having fun. You know, like in all the shorts I watched, it looked like it's a good time on set. But I'm curious, too, where did you get like your beginnings in sort of genre filmmaking? I mean, there's a very clear horror through line, even in the stuff that is maybe like doesn't involve a vampire. I could say this is probably still horror. So obviously you're a big genre fan. Like, where did that start?
So when I came into, this is going to be a funny story, but when I came into film school, I really wanted to do really unique pieces, like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, or just really like out there films. I think everybody who comes into film school comes with a bit of gravitas. But one day we had one of the producers from Father's Day come and talk to us, and he was talking to us about his experience with Troma, who basically put them into a contract to produce a feature-length film for $10,000, and it needed a car stunt, and it needed a fire stunt, and already it's like, well, you're using volunteers, you're shooting on the weekends, but maybe you're going to get something like really big. And so at that point I was like, well, I should watch one of these Troma films and kind of see what the fuss is. And the one that really like opened my mind, and I want to put a warning out that I don't necessarily think this is a great example for anybody, but it was Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. And I watched this, and it's all of a sudden clicked in my mind. You don't need to make great art. You don't need to win the Oscars. Sometimes the goal should be entertainment and just being like fun and making sure that like your audience is having a good time versus being you know intellectually engaged.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's enough oxygen in the atmosphere for both. You can have stuff that is very sort of engaging in like an emotional way or in a spiritual way. And you can have stuff like Poltergeist where it's just super fun to watch. And, you know, in watching all of the shorts that I did in preparation for this interview, I think there's a very clear sense of humor that is present in everything. So first I want to ask you, like, where did you develop your sense of humor? Like, did this come from sort of like as a child, like you always kind of had this, or is this something that you had like very specific influences for? Because even though these are all for the most part horror shorts, they take the time to actually like set up some really funny jokes.
Well, maybe I'm just a funny guy. growing up, a lot of my my favorite stuff was like comedies and horror comedies. Robin Williams was a huge influence to me, just as a person. But some of the like best films, just in terms of like creating the experience, are the ones that first engage with you on a humorous level, engage with you on an emotional level. But I do feel that the entirety of the experience is the goal. And I feel that humor kind of invites people to participate and come in first, and maybe like lets them put their guard down a little bit, kind of invites them to open up their minds and come on board that this is going to be not just a short experience or a scary experience, but it's going to be a good experience for everybody involved. And I like you said, it does seem like we're having a lot of fun on set. We definitely are. I think that's one of the goals, is that if you're having fun on set, it carries across into the film and makes it a good experience to watch as much as it is to make.
I mean, that's really cool. Do you have like a sort of, I guess, mental balance sheet when writing the horror comedy? Like, you want it to sort of have equal amounts of both, or how do you navigate that balance?
No, I would say this is all instinct and ADHD.
Hey, yeah. I mean, look, just if it works, it works. Yeah. I watched a lot of these shorts, and so I'm curious in terms of just like chronological order. I see Paint the Town Red, Topher Stoner Corner, The Devil and I, Tune In for Murder, and Don't Tell Your Mom. So in which order did that happen?
Paint the Town Red was when I was starting to get my feet. So I would say this is my first Bad Cookie film, and I did this collaborating with Ariel. So we both took on director responsibilities, and we both came at the script together. And this was just so that I could kind of find my legs and get a feel for it as a first time director out of school. Like I'd done smaller projects, but this was the first time that I was approaching like a set that we were producing. So Paint the Town Red was the first. And after Paint the Town Red, we were crowdfunding to get the Bad Cookie combo, which is Nepenthes and The Devil and I, funded. So we were doing something to fund them both together on Indiegogo, which at the time was quite a popular thing to do. It got us about $5,300, which was enough to do both of these shorts in a really good way. However, the filming of that even though I had the script, took place after Tune In for Murder. So Tune In for Murder would have been my first solo short. And Tune In for Murder, by the way, is a really unique piece because it is a virtual reality film. It is essentially, I put the 360 degree camera on a mannequin who was the dead body. And the premise of the short is it's a locked room murder mystery of 1940s television. And so everybody surrounding this body is discussing and trying to solve this murder, kind of Agatha Christie style. And it's a unique piece because you have to decide where you're going to watch it from. So to watch it, you need a virtual reality, either your phone or a headset. And you're placed within a black and white television environment. So Tune In for Murder would have been my first short, but Devil and I would have been my first narrative solo short. And so I brought in Luke Bramley from Luchigor. I brought all my friends. And it's probably my most serious short, but it is a period piece taking place in 1800s, pre-Canada, essentially one of the like fur trading forts. And then Topher Stoner Corner was Topher Stoner Corner was a really fun project to take on. And it's really unique how that one came about, because one of my friends, who is a director in Las Vegas, the director of Pool Party Massacre, had just gotten some lighters. And he was asking on Facebook, does anybody smoke weed out of a Mountain Dew can behind the 7-Eleven anymore? I just got these lighters. And I reached out to him. I said, if I create for you a step-by-step instruction video on how to smoke weed out of a Mountain Dew can behind a 7-Eleven, will you send me one of these lighters? And he said, I absolutely. And as I was writing the script, I just, at the time it was COVID, I was excited to have a project, and I just kind of threw myself into it, literally.
Yeah.
I star in that one. And I think it's one of the funniest things that I've ever made. Until Don't Tell Your Mom, which was another just unique opportunity. My friend's parents had a factory that they were shutting down and had access to, and they invited me to shoot there over a weekend, and I had to.
Yeah. Wise choice. Yeah, so Don't Tell Your Mom is going to be released on Halloween, right?
Halloween, okay. 10 a.m. our time, which puts it a bit later for everybody else, but yes, Halloween.
And, okay, so as I was watching a lot of the shorts, I noticed that there is on YouTube the live chat replay. So is this stuff where you're doing like communal screenings for the films when you're releasing them? Is that the plan for Don't Tell Your Mom?
Yes. So we do the YouTube premieres, and you know, it's just a kind of fun way to engage with the audience and be a part of that premiere. Live chat, a good way to just see what everybody's thinking of it at the time and encouraging them to speak up. Typically, you know, we'll see about 5 or 6 people, not a lot of people, and the views will grow over time. But I do find the experience just fun in that inviting people to come aboard and share their thoughts as the film is screening allows me to kind of see what's working and what doesn't.
Yeah, that's a sort of very like direct feedback method there. And so I'll ask you a couple of things about this before we talk a little bit more about Don't Tell Your Mom specifically. But how do you typically, I guess, measure your own progress? Like, do you have the people within the production company that talk about the things that they liked to do the most and you sort of lean into that? Because like, this is all a big collaborative thing where you're helping other people make their movies, they're helping you make yours. So do you have like big roundtable discussions where you talk about like your goals for the future? Or yeah, like how do you chart your progress and getting from the most recent project to the next project?
So me and Ariel are very collaborative in what we do for Bad Cookie Pictures. If she's got a project, she pitches it to me and Jordan. Jordan is our camera or editor often. And if I got a project, like we have a big Discord group where we will collaborate all together, talk about our projects, talk about our pitches, make sure that everything is on board. This is how we organize our shoots, how we discuss ideas. So it is very direct in that we're discussing things near daily on this Discord about our projects. And I would say the big measure, just in terms of making sure that our quality is improving, making sure that we're gaining momentum, getting more people. I think the film festivals are a really good measure of how we're doing. We can see how the bigger festivals are starting to engage with us and take on more of our shorts. We can see how we're getting awarded, how many festivals we're getting accepted into versus how many just aren't taking it on. One of the big improvements is we did start aiming for an under 10 minute time frame for each of our shorts, which has made it more programmable, but has also made it a lot more focused, made us you know, a bit more tight as filmmakers, just on a practical sense, where we're filming a lot more effectively. And you know, we're just seeing more engagement as we grow and build, and not just our audience, but our networks and our collaborators and our opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very like holistic way to look at it, and I think a very like healthy way to approach it. And you said, like, obviously, you know, you and Ariel collaborate very closely and you have a large, well, I don't know if it's large, but you have a Discord chat where you sort of discuss these things on a regular basis. So when it comes to, I want to say, investment of time for things like festivals, I imagine at some point there are rejections that happen from festivals. And so how do you deal with getting rejected in those situations and then continuing momentum and continuing to like chart your progress for the rest of it?
Rejections are a part of any collaborative or artistic experience. Ariel's quite good in it because as an actress, she's got to take on a lot more of those. What I would say is it is not a rejection of the film. It does not mean that your film is bad or you're a bad filmmaker if it doesn't get into a festival. These festivals are, you know, getting hundreds, if not thousands, of films submitted to them. And often they have one night, you know, that they're trying to program. So being rejected from a film festival does not mean that your film doesn't live up to their standards. It just means that it was not able to fit in this specific night, this specific place. And I think you should take that for everything that you're doing. It does not mean that you're a bad filmmaker if you're not getting into festivals. It just means that they're not appropriate for those festivals.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. And I think for people maybe that are unfamiliar with sort of like the film festival kind of basics, we'll say, right? So when a movie that you submit does get taken on, what happens between the point where you submit it and the point where you either are maybe awarded or not awarded? I'm curious personally, say you put a movie into a festival, you don't actually win any awards on it. Is there any kind of feedback that happens along the way from people in the festival that you can like actively use, or is the end game getting into like the nominations and considerations portion?
Well, for me personally, the point of getting into a festival is so that you can go promote at the festival. We do a lot of festivals outside of town, stuff that we normally wouldn't be able to attend or get to. And no, we don't get a lot of feedback unless some of the bigger festivals will invite press or reviewers to come and engage with the filmmakers. And in which case you might see, reviews, you might see people reaching out for interviews, you might see just a little bit of attention before the festival. But I would say the goal ultimately is to attend the festival, to meet the people who, not just your audience, but your peers, other people who are attending the festival as filmmakers, inviting them to watch your film and making sure you talk about it with them afterwards, and just having that experience and dialogue where everybody gets together and discusses the films and meets each other and talks about what they're working on and going to do next. The actual networking and social side of the festival is one of my favorite things. So everyone that we play in Vancouver, we try to get to. And it's a good idea to network with the organizers of the festivals, because a lot of the times they're friendly, they love genre films, and they're often involved in other projects that will benefit your films as well. So for example, I was in a festival last year with Don't Tell Your Mom, the Vancouver horror show. This year they brought me along on their roadshow show, so they played in front of a wrestling match.
Okay.
Here in Vancouver. And this weekend I'm going to Cowichan Valley on Vancouver Island to go see a screening. And at the same time, we're screening at Terrence, BC. So the real value of a festival is the people involved and who you're going to meet.
That's awesome, man. Congrats. I gotta see video of the wrestling match as the background for the festival discussion. That's gotta be very interesting. Was there a match going on during it?
So there was about six shorts, and they played on three different screens behind the ring.
Oh.
And this was before the different the wrestling show. And then as soon as they finished, the wrestling show started, and it was brutal and awesome and hilarious. And a guy got thrown into a TV. So
I was
just stoked to be. I was very excited to see just having such a unique experience for my film. I think that was one of the most incredible moments.
Yeah, that's kind of wild, but it sounds like a lot of fun. So you had mentioned already as well with Don't Tell Your Mom that you had taken it to a festival last year. And have you taken it to multiple festivals? Was that what was screened at the wrestling event?
Yes. Don't Tell Your Mom is our latest festival film. It has been screening at, I think, about 27 festivals over the last year. It's taken home three awards, including two of those were Audience Choice, and it took home Best International Film at Terror on the Plains Festival, which is actually at a drive-in movie theater in Kansas City.
Cool.
And I didn't get to go to that one, but I was really excited to know that this short film, which is kind of an 80s throwback, played on a drive-in movie theater for people to enjoy in that format. And it kind of inspired me last summer. Basically, when I was in Edmonton, I reached out to this fella who does bootleg VHSs, and I got all of our short films, our like 10 main ones, onto a videotape.
Awesome.
That I got to keep as a kind of souvenir.
That's very cool. And is that something that you're going to like mass produce for Bad Cookie as an item, or is that something just that you keep for your collection?
Well, I've got three extra right now that I was considering some sort of contest or some sort of way to engage. I would love to do a mass production of the VHS tapes, you know, if there's interest out there. But
there might be. VHS is making a comeback. I don't know. All of a sudden, I see all my like film friends online are buying VHS tapes from thrift stores. I'm like, I don't even think I have a VCR anymore. It's maybe in storage, but I don't know.
It is a great nostalgic experience because those were the films that I watched growing up, was on VHS videotape. I can still feel the, you know, tricolor lights and the kind of fuzz of the TV when you're touching it. Like it's a very nostalgic experience. And I always knew growing up that I'd want to see my films on a videotape. because that's how I enjoyed the format. And so getting onto physical media, very important, just as a, just to get the experience out of what you're doing as an artist, personally. I don't know if it's important for gaining audience or things like that, but as an artist, it feels good to have that physical touch element to your craft.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least just observationally, like physical media is important to a lot of people, maybe now more than it has been since the invention of streaming because of some of the decisions made by streamers to remove things. I personally like proactively went and found a like physical media store that sells and rents nearby, because I was looking for a movie that I had to watch for the show. And I'm like, this came out last year. It was on HBO Max 6 months ago. Like, where did it go? And it's just gone because it's in distribution hell. So I'm like, all right, I need to have access to be able to rent something that I want to rent that has like a physical copy of it. And so I still have a big collection that's mostly in storage because I moved recently, but I see a lot of friends that are like huge physical media collectors. And also personally on this show on Halloween, I'm going to spin the wheel and we're going to see who wins the gift card, because I decided to do a Halloween giveaway for $50 to any label of your choice. So I'm going to give away $50 just to incentivize somebody to go buy physical media, because I think the value of it is probably going to be more important over the next maybe 10 years, whether that's like holding a physical copy in your hand or having like a private server, which also became really popular with stuff like Plex in terms of film preservation. So like getting the VHS for you, obviously huge win. And it's going to be awesome to like have that just forever now. Congratulations.
I can speak to this personally, this problem, actually. When I was one of the series that I worked on with Gigi Sol Guerrero was called La Quinceañera. Mm. And this one was for Warner Brothers. And they had created a short series format streaming service. And I can't for the life of me remember what it was called. And essentially, they produced this web series for that streaming service. The streaming service lasted maybe 6 months, if that. And now that series is completely unavailable. Mm. Because Warner Brothers holds the rights. They shelved the series. They got rid of the format for the series to go on. And so now it's completely inaccessible to the world. And it's great. It's a great piece of art. And because it never had the chance to be published on physical media, it cannot see the light of day. And this is all because of creative projects in the hands of business people, right? And it sucks, because the bigger projects that get that kind of funding and abilities now have to live at the whims of these uncreative business people.
Yeah, it's a very sort of slippery slope, and especially when there's a lot of change at like the top of the pyramid in terms of leadership and then their decisions. I mean, the whole thing with like Warner was about to just axe Turner Classic Movies altogether, and you had to have like Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese and all these like famous filmmakers be like, no, we want to preserve this for the reason of preservation. Like, as a simple business decision, it would have been gone, but it drummed up so much interest from people in the film community that like they ended up stepping up and saving it. But like, realistically, I don't think Zaslav cares about it at all and would have happily axed it from their roster. But it's such a wild time for filmmaking. But I think it's a great time for filmmaking also, for like, you can make a movie probably more easy than you ever could before because of things like digital and the improvement in phone cameras and just the ability to shoot something very quickly and put it together. Like something like YouTube exists where you can get a film out, and you've made a lot of these. By the time I got to Don't Tell Your Mom, I saved it for last after all of the other ones I watched, because I was like, well, this is the one that's coming out. I assume it's the newest, but I didn't actually like see the date. I want to say that I feel like it is the like most polished of the shorts that I watch. Like, it looks probably the best in terms of like how it's lit. I love the environment that it takes place in. I think honestly, like, your music supervision on all your movies is really good, but I like that this tonally feels, like you said, very sort of like 80s. It's like the synthiness of it is very cool. It's something that I like. I talked to a Toronto-based filmmaker who made Going In, and that was all sort of made in the 80s, but not to pilfer like typical 80s stuff. It was made to embody the flavor of a film that was made in the 80s, and it's very cool in that way. And again, like, the music plays a huge role in that. So when you look at Don't Tell Your Mom and you see the kind of sort of like humor that's in place in it, I think is very sort of like tongue in cheek, but it is smart. I like that it's sort of framed as a drug deal kind of situation with this blood. I love the subtlety of like he whips out of this is vampire gold. It's so specific. And it's such like it's so shiny. Like, this is not like currency that you would use every day. But in putting all of that together, you obviously had an environment to film in that you knew you had a limited amount of time. So you started with the location, which seems like an odd approach, but a very interesting exercise in writing something specifically to the location you have. So, like, how did development start with that?
Oh, it was incredible. Like, you're right in saying Don't Tell Your Mom is my most polished and probably my best made film. And I'm really excited to share it with everybody this Halloween. But it did start with my friends telling me that we have a factory, it's shutting down, and come out and film, come out and look at it, really. And the funny thing about this factory is a few years prior, I had worked in a factory that was in the same complex. And I was actually working in that factory in the same complex for about 3 years. And so that environment really struck a personal chord with me because it was such a familiar experience. And so as I was imagining this, I was imagining my own time in a kind of backyard. I don't want to say like underground environment, but it was kind of like, you know, people in a small business coming together, working together, almost like a family. And I drew a lot from just that feeling and that emotion of being playful and being a little bit back and forth, having a, like, the banter is what gets you through the day, right? And I think that really carries across into Don't Tell Your Mom, in that the characters are the important part, more so than the premise or the vampires that come in. And the vampires are just kind of a normal thing that take place in the world. And this is kind of my approach in general to bad cookie films, is that it's a world where vampires, monsters, ghosts, Satanists, demons might exist, and you just kind of, it's still kind of normal.
I like that. There was a show called The Valley that was like Cops, but it took place in the San Fernando Valley near where I live, and it was just like, yeah, werewolves and stuff is like normal.
And Wellington Paranormal as well, and What We Do in the Shadows. Yeah. Like that. I think there's a, because we all know the lore. We've seen vampires over and over and over again, and you know it ignites a kind of nostalgia because growing up, maybe you watched Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet Frankenstein, or you may have watched Scooby-Doo. Yeah. You know the rules already. You know what you would come to terms with, and It's just a fun place to be in.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a fun place to get to write in, I want to say. And I want to ask you a little bit about Jesse, too, who plays the lead in the film, because he's so good in this. where did you know Jesse from? How did you get him?
Jesse, I met on the Luchigor sets, in fact. So I've known Jesse a very long time. We're very familiar. We're very good friends. Hey, you've probably noticed he's worked on every film that I've created. And that's just because I know how he works. I know he's a professional who comes to set completely in character and completely like aware of what needs to go. And he's got incredible comedic timing. He's a familiar face. He's an incredible talent, and I'm always happy to bring him aboard.
Yeah, he was so much fun in this, because I think for me, watching how his performance sort of unfolds is that he understands the humor. So like you said, like the timing makes sense, but also like in the moments in a movie that I think we can all acknowledge is having fun, like when he sort of turns on the seriousness, it really works, and it makes sense in the world, and like he's intense, but then also can dial it back and enjoy like just playing in the humor space. And so I think it really makes this movie pop in a very special kind of way.
He took the script on an incredible journey, just in the way he was able to to be in the timing, and I thoroughly enjoy working with Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you guys had a lot of fun. The movie itself, I really enjoyed personally. I liked all of the shorts that I watched. There wasn't one where I'm just like, oh, I didn't like this. It was really fun for me to sit there and sort of like visualize the environment that you guys must have been working in on set, and to see the jokes land, and to see like, honestly, there's some really good practical makeup effects throughout a lot of these films as well. And when you're making horror content, I've always been a huge proponent of practical effects. And there's like some visual effects shots mixed in as well. But stuff with like ripping flesh, or I think it was, I'm going to butcher the name. Was it Nepenthes or...
Nepenthes.
So even in that, like, that's a very gooey project, where I think there's a scene where she reaches for the doorknob at the end, and it's like the flesh on the inside of her hand sloshes off, and I just found myself like, ugh. Oh, yeah, it caught me off guard, even though the rest of the movie was already gooey at that point. So I think you're doing some really good, interesting, funny work. And I wish you great success in the future. Is there anything that you wanted to tell the audience about the movie and the premiere on Halloween?
The premiere is happening on our YouTube channel. You can go check out the trailer now, I guess. The trailer is is accessible on YouTube if you just want to get a sense of. Also, all of our previous projects are on YouTube, so it's a great way to get to know us. I'm going to be watching the premiere and live chatting 10 o'clock LA and Vancouver time. That's Pacific time.
Yes.
And I'm so excited to have people watch along with us and enjoy. And, you know, if you like it, tell your friends. It's going to be there forever.
Well, this has been a real pleasure to sit down and chat with you. I really appreciate your time. I'm glad that we could make this work on short notice.
Oh, I'm always happy to come aboard. And I'm real excited about your Nick Cage series next month. So
that's right. Nick Vember is finally here. And I'm very excited for it myself. I just want to say again, thank you. We'll coordinate the Nick Cage stuff a little bit later. But yes, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this Spotlight session right here on Bad Movies We Love. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to follow the show, leave us a review, and share it with your fellow movie lovers. Thank you to Topher for coming on the show and sharing his insight and his experience with us. You can check out a large collection of the short films that he has made himself and a bunch of the others that he has worked on over at the Bad Cookie Pictures YouTube page. And speaking of YouTube, I'm going to be there live on Halloween morning when Topher releases his new short film, Don't Tell Your Mom. And you too can join in on the fun by heading over to the Bad Cookie Pictures YouTube page, and I'm going to put all that information in the show notes for you. And then in November, Topher and his partner, Ariel Hansen, are going to join the show for Mom and Dad to help me celebrate Nickvember right here on Bad Movies We Love. And until next time, stay curious and take care.